Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for February 25th, 2021. A lot of topics to cover tonight. My main science topic, I will be talking about black holes, and a very interesting topic, how astronomers are mistakenly interpreting what they're seeing in foreign galaxies. Now they're of the opinion, falsely, that there are black holes just wandering around all these galaxies, just zipping around everywhere. And they're little ones. Now, let me explain something. A black hole, theoretically, is a black hole. Once you hit that event horizon, there's no more. There's no way of understanding how much mass is in there. You can look at gravitational things reacting around it, etc. But from looking at the black hole itself, you cannot tell its mass. It's you know, bigger than a certain amount. And so, like I say, all of the estimates of the size of the alleged black hole are from secondary, tertiary observations and interpretation of data. But what is really going on there? So I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about solar panels in space, a phone app for COVID that's going to be just rushed into place. I'll be talking about rich people with too much money doing things, and corporations doing things that affect your life and you don't have any say over it, like this phone app, or like Gates, Musk, Elon Musk, Buffett, Schwab, you know, all of these rich people that are out doing things that affect your life. And it's like, wait a minute. The American dream has turned into the American nightmare because these rich people get a hair crossways somewhere and, you know, are off on a tangent doing something that they think is good. And so anyway, I'll be talking about that. Anyway, there are lots of more topics. I'm not going to name them all. I'm talking about the dust storms coming off the Sahara Desert. Very interesting. And just a lot of other topics. So, okay, starting out, space.com and spaceweather.com are two very owned web pages. These are owned, the spaceweather.com and all the weather channels, by the way, are owned by the Rothschilds. It used to be you could get real data to make determinations, like I could look at data, etc., and talk about the weather and weather, what's really going on with the weather, and interpret it with satellite data. That's all gone away. They have scrubbed everything from the internet. And so now space.com, which is a mouthpiece for NASA and all things of standard science, and then also spaceweather.com, are pushing sci-fi content. And so I believe they're doing this because it's an audience they're grabbing at, because those people spend money. They spend money on their sci-fi stuff. They're addicted to this. They're addicted to that like other people are addicted to heroin. Sci-fi people, Trekkies, as we call them, Trekkies is a term, if you're not familiar with that, back in the Star Trek days, Dr. Spock and et cetera, Jim the scientist and the physicist and Captain Kirk and all of them, there were people that followed that religiously. And this is true of almost any television show. There are people that followed them. But Star Trek was in a class all of itself. And there were people that had meetings. They would dress up like Dr. Spock or Jim the physicist or the or Captain Kirk, and they would go around, have meetings, and they would repeat the lines. And so anyway, there was actually, this is rather comical, I saw a Saturday Night Live skit. That's when Saturday Night Live was funny. Anyway, they actually had them there. They had Captain Kirk and some of the characters from Star Trek there, and they had the characters of Saturday Night Live dressed up as the Trekkies. And this was interesting because they were repeating lines, and that one guy, Dana Carey was his name, or Dana something, he goes, "Captain Kirk, what were you going to do in the episode where the Klingons and there were these little fuzzy ball monsters and they were going to kill everybody? What were you thinking there?" Captain Kirk comes back and he says, hey, this is a TV show, you guys. This is not reality. You know, this is a television show. Get a grip. Anyway, it's very comical. But space.com, spaceweather.com are going after the market of the Trekkies. Marketing is plastered all over their page, space sci-fi stuff. You know, like Flash Gordon goes to Mars. Anyway, I think it's worth noting that it's just comical, I think, that the so-called hard science news and hard weather science news, space weather news, is going after the sci-fi market. The Perseverance rover on Mars landed this last week to a lot of fanfare, international fanfare. They had interpreters from many different countries, many different languages, and so the feed I saw was in a foreign language. And so anyway, lots of fanfare, lots of hoopla, lots of cheering. You know, we did it, number one, the right stuff, all those things. But when you look at the pictures and the very first pictures that were sent back, clearly Mars is the result of water. Now, where's the water? There ain't none. There's not a drop of water. There's not hardly a molecule of water on Mars. So all the water is gone. And when you look at this, these are surface features. Now, this lander landed on the surface of Mars, and everywhere you look are water features, results of water erosion, water shaping, water. But there ain't no water. And it's all recent. It's very clearly recent, because all of this geology would have been erased if it were billions of years ago, billions with a B. And so what that tells you is that the surface of Mars was recently characterized by water. Where did the water go? Well, the real situation is that Mars had oceans and an atmosphere only a few thousand years ago, and it was relieved of that when the comet Venus came through the solar system and eventually became what we call the planet Venus, now the hot, steaming, carbon dioxide, atmosphere-ridden planet, and that was raging through the solar system, and the ancients talk about this. That's what the Velikovsky story is all about. And, of course, Velikovsky got stomped on, and there's a lot of layers to the stomping of Velikovsky. You have the Sagans and the Stephen Jay Goulds and the other people that were in the departments of major departments in the Ivy League schools and in California, etc., that came out and said, we got to get rid of this guy. He's got the international public following his work. And they did not understand, but Velikovsky was 100% correct. Yeah, that guy. But see, Velikovsky was not studying astronomy or space science or anything else. He was studying ancient calendars. And what he discovered was that in the ancient texts, he was finding the continual references of Venus the comet. Every civilization around the world that recovered out of this decimated period about 3,500 years ago, 3,600 years ago now, were decimated completely, and they rebuilt the calendar, etc. So when you look at the Perseverance rover on Mars, it just reeks of Velikovsky and the issue that Mars had oceans and atmospheres, and standard science cannot accommodate this. So what they do is they say, well, the oceans and water were there billions of years ago, and due to global warming, I mean, they got to pull the global warming thing out of the rabbit hat, and everything is either an asteroid hit it or global warming or whatever. But very clearly, the pictures show Mars as a water planet. Solar panels in space. Oh my goodness. Here we go again. Let me give you a little prelude here. When NASA, back in the 1970s, this was at the heart of the Apollo, the fake Apollo landings on the moon, where they were, it was very clear that in the 70s you know, like the original landing on the moon, 1969, et cetera, NASA was really fading out in the mid to late 70s, and they were canceling out the Apollo program and dismantling the Saturn V rockets, the Saturn V launch pads. All of the production facilities for the Saturn V rocket were being moved away. And so anyway, in this time period, NASA, some scientists went into a laboratory and they were going to try and do some work on alternative energy. That's where the three-blade wind turbine got its start. And of course, throughout history, there have been thousands and thousands of attempts to create a wind energy device. And so what NASA wanted to do was build a prototype that then could be used by industry. And so they built the three-blade wind turbine. And what they did is they had a wind tunnel, a little one, and they put the three-blade wind turbine in there, and it spun real fast, and it got good results, high efficiency from the wind, etc. And that's what they did. So they made a little teeny one, and then they said, okay, all you industry out there, take it over and make big ones. But the point is that you have to understand something, whether you're building boats or airplanes or skyscrapers or whether you're building whatever you're building. You have to understand the concept of scaling. Scaling, when you're dealing with aerodynamic entities like wings on airplanes and things like that, don't scale good. They are propellers, another example. Propeller planes had limitations because you could only make the propellers so big and you could only make them go so fast, spinning, so many RPMs when they became unwieldy. You couldn't make them any bigger and get any more power out of them because they would literally fly apart. They're moving very fast. The stresses, the centrifugal force stresses on the blades and et cetera, are huge, enormous. And so the propellers have a limitation. Also, propellers do not work backwards. It's not a reversible process. In other words, you put a propeller on an airplane, you spin it real fast, and it pushes air back. It takes air that's sitting still or relatively still, and then it pushes it back really fast and makes you go forward. But the same process doesn't work in reverse. If you take an airstream, if you take that same airstream, and you put a propeller in there, it's not going to extract the same amount of energy or anywhere close to it that would be put into the airstream if you were using the propeller in a positive propulsion sense. Okay, just to kind of clarify what I said, take a propeller, put it on an airplane, rev up the motor and make it go real fast, and you will get a stream of air coming off that propeller that can make the airplane go forward. Now, take its wind tunnel, take that same stream of air that's coming off the backside of the propeller. Now put a propeller in that airstream and see what percentage of the energy you can capture coming off that airstream and turning it back into electrical energy or any kind of energy, but typically electrical. And it turns out that you cannot get very much at all. Propellers are not reversible processes, and there are many processes in science that are not reversible. And so, anyway, the propeller is one of them. So making a propeller is not a reversible process. What they did is they got a little teeny three-blade wind turbine to work in a laboratory wind tunnel and then never went back to understand that it doesn't scale. It does not scale up to big ones. So the big ones, the little ones, let's say, are spinning at 500 RPM. That's about when these little ones are spinning at. And I sell little ones as a complement to the wing generator because they're less expensive, they're home electronics, and it fills a certain market for the wind energy. And they're much less expensive than solar panels for the amount of energy you get. So anyway, but you can't make them big. The bigger ones don't work. I don't go over 10 kilowatts with the three-blade, multi-blade generators than the ones that I sell on my webpage. Okay, so anyway, now, fast forward to 2021. Right now, NASA put they called it a secret program in the so-called X-plane. but they built a solar panel that was 1 foot by 1 foot. That's as big as, like, your dinner plate, to give you an idea. They built a solar panel, sent it up into space, and they got a certain amount of energy out of it, and then concluded that they could panel the sky paneled with solar panels, turn this into electrical energy that they would then beam down, Scotty, talking about Star Trek, that they would use a laser to beam this energy down to a city. Well, there's a few problems with this whole thing. They'd kill a lot of birds, lots and lots of birds. They'd probably kill a lot of other stuff. But the biggest problem is that they would discharge the ionospheric capacitor, which NASA doesn't understand. They don't even know it's there. What a bunch of buffoons. And they want to beam the energy down from outer space. Once again, then you would have to collect that energy, turn it into heat, and then use it as a heat engine, which means that about 30% of that energy would be actually usable, theoretically, more like 20% when you get done. And then 80% of that energy would go into heating up the atmosphere. Oh, my goodness. So anyway, this is NASA at its worst, once again, doing something stupid, wasting your money, and people getting paid for it. Okay, on to the next topic. There's a phone app now that is going to take the place of paper verification that you rolled up your sleeve and you got your COVID vaccination, which nobody knows if it works. Nobody's going to protect you. There's a growing number of people who have been shot damaged by these Pfizer and all of the different shot companies or vaccine companies that are putting this product out in the market. The vaccine damage is numbers are mounting. Every day you hear about it, and you see cases, video tubes of people who've been, their lives have been completely destroyed by this. But anyway, the airlines say that they're not going to enforce COVID vaccination or isolation or any other kind of rules. The airlines are saying they're not going to do it, but they will comply if there are government regulations. And so then the government will turn around and say, well, you got to have your vaccination before you can travel across the border. Just another step in the direction of insanity, worldwide lockdown. And then also this app will have your passport on it. And the what they say is that this is just the first application of this. They can add other things to it. Let's put it that way. They can add other requirements or other, you got to do this, or you have to be of the right political party, or you have to, you know, whatever it is that they put on there, they can put in the app to prevent you from traveling unless you comply. When we were kids, my friends and I saw this coming, and they would, we talked about the thought police, joking about it. And the thought police would come around and they'd go, where's your license to be here? And you'd pull out of your back pocket. This was before cell phones, of course. You'd pull out of your back pocket your stack of permission cards, and you would thumb through them until you came to the I have the right to be standing here on this corner card. And there would be like the brown shirts that would come around and check you out. Okay, so anyway, it's here, it's in an app, and they're going to, you know, and here's a company, here's the problem. You got a company that's all giddy because now IBM will be the worldwide network to coordinate the Travel Pass software on telephones, and they, I mean, this is where it's going, folks. It's gone too far. Now, it's just the, you know, 1984. George Orwell never even dreamt about this in his wildest dreams, fantasies about 1984. George Orwell never even imagined what's going on today. Just a quick note on Joe Biden. Well, would the real Joe Biden please stand up? When I was a kid, there was a TV show. It was called What's My Line? And they had a panel of stars there, movie stars and stuff, who would guess. And these people, three people would come out. And three people would come out and they would answer questions, and the panelists, movie stars, would ask them questions. And it would be like the first man to, you know, walk across a tightrope between the Empire State Building and something else, you know, something, you know. And then they would ask questions of these three characters that were sitting there and try and guess which one was the true one. Well, now we got that for the president. Would the, and then, by the way, at the end of that show, What's My Line? At the end of the period, they would guess, and the panelists, movie star panelists, would put in their vote, and then they'd say, "Would the real, you know, John Doe, whoever it was, please stand up?" And it would be everybody. It was tension. There was drum roll, and then sometimes one of the guys that wasn't, or women who wasn't the real one, would kind of half stand up and then sit down, and then the other one would stand up, and they'd all, everybody would scream and laugh, and at home you would sit there and try and guess who the real one was. You know, so it was a big, you know, it was a very popular show. This was before Jeopardy, and, you know, this is a long time ago, dating myself here. But anyway, now we got that for president. Will the real Joe Biden please stand up? And so anyway, Joe Biden has body doubles, and they appear. Now, you can look at the pictures of Joe, or if you see him on TV or in a news blip, they try to hide his ears. And that's one of the characteristics. The guy's forehead is another characteristic. There's all kinds of characteristics that you can tell. The body double would not pass facial recognition for Joe. But anyway, one of the more characteristic things is the one of the main body doubles is has earlobes that connect down to his head, down below the ear. The real Joe Biden has earlobes that are they're separated from his head, and they are cut up. It's like this: they're separated from his head. They're loose from his head. So the body double has connected earlobes. The real Joe Biden does not. And so you see a lot of times when somebody's talking about, I'm going to do this, or we're going to react to COVID-19 or whatever, it's the body double. So will the real Joe Biden please stand up? Now we have an actor that has to stand in for the president because he can't put two sentences together. Just a quick news, just a comment on fake news. This has been going on for a long time, and I've said this many times before, that there are a lot of fake controversies coming out. There's one in Congress right now. They're going, ooh, fake, the big controversy. But these are fake controversies. They're pretend controversies. They're not really controversies at all. And so the essential part of any disinformation campaign is creating and controlling both sides of the narrative. And so when they create a controversy, they create both sides so that you, and they present this as news. Oh, there's a big controversy. And you're supposed to listen to this going back and forth. And it just occupies people's time. So once again, fake news. And this happens in science also. I'll be talking about that when I talk about the black hole issue. Quickly, dust storms from the Sahara Desert are rearing up. And they typically do this during the months of February and March. And turns out that February and March are the biggest hurricane months of the year. That's interesting because you usually think of August as being the peak of the hurricane season. It starts in June, ends in November, but the peak is in August. Same for the peak of the aurora season, same for the tornado season, etc. But really, the biggest month is February, which is interesting. But anyway, over the Sahara Desert, kicking up tremendous amounts of just dirt in the air. And so this is blowing. Now it's going up towards Europe where it's been raining. So it's literally been raining mud in Europe. And by the way, if you have my 110 high-altitude photos of the American South, West, it comes with my libraries that available on my webpage. That's what I was doing when I took that footage, those photos, and there's like 110 of them. There's actually, I think, about 117 total. But I was in Los Angeles area, actually out away from Los Angeles, and was in a situation where I was going up to high altitude because I wanted to photograph the dust cloud that was coming in from China. A lot of times we get the jet stream will pick up this dust and it'll go way up in the stratosphere. So anyway, I was up there early, early in the morning. I mean, before the crack of dawn, up in the 45,000 foot altitude, and the sun started to come up, and you could see to Denver. I mean, you could see that the sky was clear in the weather report. It was one of those unusual times when there was not a cloud in the sky over the entire American Southwest. So we made the decision to fly to Denver, and so at 45,000 feet, I had my digital camera and very good resolution taking pictures of the American Southwest. And so it was done from straight down to the north. And the early pictures, you can see the haze in the atmosphere. In fact, at the top of the pictures where it goes off into outer space, it turns purple and blue and then into black, into outer space. That's how high we were. And so the then continued on to Denver. And so there's a series of 110 photos which cover the entire American Southwest. And so that's available. And that's what I was doing, was looking at the dust cloud at high altitude. That's going on in the Sahara Desert right now, as I say, raining mud in Europe. And a lot of times that Sahara Desert dust comes all the way over to the United States also. Just a quick note, there's a lot of 3D printing going on today, but it's being used in outer space. There's a company called Relativity Space. I believe I got that right. My hat's off to them. They are making printed 3D rockets. Now, 3D printing is being used for houses, being used for small parts, small manufacturing of parts, and they can make it all types of materials, very hard, very durable, flexible. It's really amazing stuff. And so anyway, I think that's really interesting. I think I talked a few weeks ago about 3D printing of houses on Mars. There's some companies looking into that. 3D structures, 3D printing. And so I guess I'd have to fly your 3D printing press up to Mars or wherever you're going. And by the way, there's nobody going to Mars. Nobody's going to Mars. They have not even gotten close to understanding the technologies and the human effects to go to Mars. So if you have a spacecraft where you can get to Mars and you can carry big payloads, that's one thing. But understanding the human effects of long-term weightlessness, nobody has ever been in space for that long a period of time weightless. Nobody has ever been completely independent of the Earth without supplies from Earth or maintenance from Earth or other technical assistance from Earth, completely autonomous for a period of 6 to 7 years. So it's really out there. And then the big issue is radiation. They don't have that covered at all. They don't understand it. They don't understand the very severe X-ray radiation that comes from being trapped in a local electrical battery. I talk about those in my weather book. But at any rate, going back to, that's a little caveat side note, but 3D printing in space is here to stay, and I predict also they will also get into, for example, pressure containers. Of course, when you're in outer space, you need pressurized containers for your spacecraft. But there will also become a time when you need very, very high pressure containers. And so there'll be a combination of 3D printing with things like carbon fiber technology. So you'd make, for example, a tube out of 3D printing, and then you'd wrap that with a carbon fiber wrap and then put another layer of 3D printing over that, thusly getting the hardness and the strength and the tensile strength, et cetera, that comes from carbon fiber, combining materials in as far as creating these space vehicles, space residences, whatever they're building. Okay, rich people with a lot of money, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Buffett, Schwab, and the list goes on. And Richard Branson also, you know, all these people with a lot of money. Branson seems to have his head screwed on much more straight than most of the other people. But Musk does some really great stuff. But sometimes they take their money and they think they got a great idea, and then they go running off Tennessee tuxedo style, and then it has adverse effects on the public, like Musk putting 60,000 satellites up into low Earth orbit. The end result, one thing is that, well, it'll bring internet to all locations on Earth for a very inexpensive price, allegedly. But the other thing is it peppers the sky with little blinking lights. Or how about just blanketing the Earth with 5G radiation? Or Bill Gates, you all know the story of his stuff, or Warren Buffett, able to go to Congress, get lobbyists to go in, pay off congressmen, and influence congressmen to pass legislation to create subsidies that Buffett makes billions of dollars off of. You know, and so on. The question comes down to this. People that have lots of money is kind of the American dream. The more money you got, it's like, ooh, you know, Hollywood, superstars. And that's why they do Hollywood. They take these few people, they glamorize them up to the ceiling, and that's why they call it Tinseltown. There's a reason for that. But anyway, they are glorified, and everybody looks at them like they're really something. But then, that's one thing, just have a lot of money and be flaunting it and have rich houses and mega mansions in Hollywood or L.A. or whatever. That's one thing. But then, you know, and if you have a big yacht, you know, whatever. But when they take their money and put it into things that affect the public, there's got to be a point at which you say, whoa, Nelly, stop this. No more. You people do not have the right to go out with your money and create a monster that we all have to deal with. You know, Bill Gates and then, you know, and his so-called research and foundations, etc. And these, you know, the Clintons with the Clinton Foundation, getting money and peddling influence, etc. There's really, you know, a limit to what people should do that have a lot of money. And people don't make good decisions, and they affect people in very drastic ways. So I'm just saying there's got to be a way to deal with people. For example, congressmen that get very rich. How did Nancy Pelosi or any of these congressmen get wealthy by being congressmen? They don't make that much money. They don't make lots and lots of money. So how come they end up to be millionaires and millionaires? And then you get the families involved. This is where it really gets nefarious, is when you start getting entire families involved in high levels of control where, you know, what is it, Newsom, the governor of California, is nephew of Nancy Pelosi, and she's married to a guy that, you know, and then they have other relatives that are related to. Or Susan Rice, you know, now from the old Obama administration, now I think is Secretary of State under Biden, and she's married to the head of like ABC news media or something. It's not coincidence that these people are all related, married to the families, etc. And then once again, you get the big money movement, and influence, peddling influence for the benefit of a few people. What do you do about that? How do you stop this? How do you put the brakes on a system that's gone awry, that's just over the top, out in left field, in orbit someplace, gone off the deep end? How do you stop this? There's got to be a way for the general public to say, hey, you know, and you know, the Congress and the House of Representatives and the courts and the executive branch are all supposed to be for the people, but they're not. They're all for this little group of people and the courts, and, you know, it's all one big circus. It's one big circus, and you don't belong to it. You're the worker. You're the You're the slave labor out there. Here's an interesting story. $900 to charge a Tesla automobile the other day in Texas. So the electricity rates are going through the roof. The amount of money per megawatt hour of electricity went up to $9,000. And normally it's about $25 in Texas. That's the bulk rate. That's the wholesale rate of electricity in Texas. Typically around $25-$30 for a megawatt hour of electricity energy. It went up to $9,000. So instead of being $18 to charge a Tesla automobile, it's now $900. So I'm telling you, folks, my invention, the wing generator, couldn't be around at a better time in history. And the electric power companies are failing. I've talked extensively about that. I'm not going to talk about that tonight, but I've listened to my previous shows. I go into that in a lot of detail. Let's see. Just take care of yourselves. That's my advice. And the people in Texas are realizing, hey, the government ain't going to come rolling up to your house with a big shiny truck, open up the back doors, and doggone it, here's a lot of food. Here's some, you know, little generator. Here's a lot of 1,000-gallon tank of propane. No, that ain't happening. It is not going to happen. They're not going to pull up with a truck full of PVC pipe and tubes to help fix all the broken water pipes in your house. Oh my goodness, what a disaster. Talk about a governmental collapse. But understand that what happened in Texas was a planned event. It was orchestrated. They could have run the power companies, but did not. They shut everything down, and that's what I said all along. I said that it would be due to a false flag solar flare event, and that's still in the rabbit hat. That has not come out of the box yet. So what happened in Texas was bad weather, whether it was manipulated or not, whether, you know, this polar vortex baloney. But anyway, be that as it may, that's not the main point. The main point is that it was used to shut down the power grid. And that's what I said. If you want to stop anybody cold in their tracks, shut down the power grid, because there ain't nothing moving if you do that. You can't pump gas, you can't pump diesel, you can't put out natural gas. The vehicles cannot load up with fuel so they can deliver products. Everything shuts down. You can't deliver water. If you have a gravity feed system, you can't shut the valves because they're usually automatic, electronic. I mean, it's just a major, major, major mess. Everything is going, everything doesn't work. Or the other way of saying that is nothing works. But it was planned. This was planned, orchestrated at the federal level. And the idea was to punish Texas. Let me just quick make mention here before I jump into the relativity topic. Sales are still on in my books, water filters, etc. Lead times for water filters are now running 3 to 4 weeks. That's what we're running, and we're trying to catch up. It's just been a lot of order activity in the end of the last year, the beginning of this year. But right now the water filters are running at around 3 to 4 week time. And it's impossible to predict if that'll grow or if that'll get less with time. It's always an effort to try and get back to normal, you know, like a number of days to ship a product. But right now, running 3 to 4 weeks, and that's happened many times in the past. But I would say, if you're thinking about getting water filter products, order them now. Because with all other products that I'm aware of, the lead times are getting longer and longer because these are critical items. These are things that people are finally waking up. I got a bunch of orders from Texas in the last week and a half. So people are waking up that, doggone it, I need a water filter and a gravity one, not one that's in line, but a gravity one. And so, you know, when you have the whole country waking up, it puts pressure on the suppliers like myself. Okay, so also my books, my education package is on sale still. The wing generators never go on sale. They're not going to ever be on sale. but it's one of the most demanding products that you can put on your portfolio of things to purchase is a wing generator, so you can support yourself with electricity if the grid goes out. And gee, the grid wouldn't go out, would it? I just can't even imagine that. Neither could the people in Texas. Okay, let me see if I... I was going to talk about solar panels versus wind, but that's for another day. I'll leave that. And just take care of yourselves. Invest in your own self-reliance. That's what the best thing I can say. Okay, now what's going on? All of a sudden, astronomers are saying that there are little black holes. They're seeing them all over the place. They look at a galaxy. And now remember that with good telescopes, with things like the Hubble Space Telescope and other good astronomical equipment, they literally can see billions of galaxies. And some of them can be magnified to the point that they fill up the whole screen. So you can see a lot of detail in the galaxies. So there are literally thousands, tens of thousands of galaxies that have very good resolution. So what's going on? After studying these for decades and going back and looking, they're seeing that through the galactic medium, in other words, you have stars, you have star dust and light from all of the stars reflecting off the stardust. But in the midst of all of this, there's some very strange happenings. It's like little point sources there that are deviating the path of light. And so as these objects move through the galaxy, it's like it's a gravitational lensing is what they call it, but it's not gravitational. It is electrical. It's the induced electric dipole force. And here again, once you start peeling back the first onion layer of standard science and they're talking about black holes, etc. Okay, well, they for a long time they talked about black holes being at the center of galaxies. That's the only place that has enough mass to even come close to becoming a black hole. So they talk about the black hole at the middle of the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy, etc., and at the center of other galaxies, etc. But all of a sudden now, you have little teeny black holes. Now, excuse me, you got little teeny black holes all over in the galaxy. Well, wait a minute. Before, the only object that could be a black hole because of its tremendous mass would be the galaxy, the nucleus of the galaxy. So what's going on here? Well, it turns out that what they're seeing is a lensing due to the induced electric dipole force that occurs around fusion-based objects. And that's in my theoretical work that was there from the very beginning. From the old Cornell days, that was one of my major discoveries. And of course, when you see standard science, when you look at standard science for what it is, they cannot admit new concepts because they have to stay with their pat answers. They have to stay with the theoretical answers that they've always chosen. And they certainly cannot let electricity or non-uniform electric fields or anything else that I talk about. They cannot let this into the arena. So the end result is that there are large star systems that have very high proton winds that create electric fields, non-uniform electric fields, which cause the bending of light. The bending of light is the lensing effect, and therefore that's what they're seeing. But in terms of trying to explain that in terms of traditional black holes, there's not enough mass there to create. And so that's why they're saying that these black holes are acting very strangely, because a black hole needs a tremendous amount of matter, according to general relativistic theory. But it turns out that there are no black holes due to gravitational effects. There simply aren't. The effects that they're seeing are electrical, and you can find these on small objects also. For example, Comet Halley had a redshift from its tail, from the tail material. This data was taken in like 1986. And the astronomers just swept the data under the rug because they didn't have an explanation. The same is true for the sun. If you look at the edges of the sun, there is a redshift that's coming off our very own sun, and it's not moving away from us at the speed of light. In fact, it's not moving away from us at all. So how does that happen? Well, once again, it's the induced electric dipole redshift, a concept that I came up with explaining how the non-uniform proton wind that comes off of a fusion-based object creates a capacitor, and that capacitor is a non-uniform capacitor because it's radially outwards. The outside charge density is lower than the inside charge density, so it's non-uniform. But it's consistent in a radial pattern. So what happens is it acts the same way as the theoretical model for the general relativity and the bending of light by gravity. But there is no gravitational effect. It's been proven over and over. There's no gravitational lensing. There's no gravitational bending of light. So the end result is that the what they're actually seeing is the result of large stars with large proton winds. It's the exact same situation happening with our own star, and the photons leaving that star or coming by it from other stars that are behind it then get caught in that electric field. And because it's non-uniform, that's one of the key issues, then the induced electric dipole redshift works. It works for bending of light and creating the redshift that gives us the false distances to those stars. They use the redshift to calculate distances. And when you, once again, peel back the first onion layer on the data, none of the data makes any sense. And they just don't even consider it because they got their marching orders that the redshift is allegedly due to objects moving away from us, but there's all kinds of objects that give a false redshift, and we can actually measure their difference, their distance by parallax or by triangulation techniques, and show that they're really not at the distance indicated by their redshifts. Okay, so that's once again in the news, and I'm just amazed at graduate students. It's really an indication of the very poor level of graduate studies in astronomy and in space science and physics in the United States that none of these students question any of this. They just do what they're told. They spit back what the professors tell them, and they don't think. They don't think that, hey, these numbers are not adding up. The data doesn't add up. There's all kinds of contradictions, and nobody's talking about that. At a certain point, you would say, hey, this is not science. This is a religion, which is really what is going on. Let me just go through the induced electric dipole redshift a little bit, and the discovery of this when I was at Cornell. The redshift data the contradictions were very well available. Let's just put it that way. They were trying to hide this. They tried to prevent, like anything, they tried to prevent any of this from being published in the so-called respectable journals. The Halton ARP work had already been done, the majority of it, taking pictures of galaxies that are attached, literally, physically. You could see the string in all the different wavelengths of light attaching quasars, which have very high redshifts compared to their associated galaxies. And then the astronomers would just not, they would make up excuses like, oh, they're not attached. That's just an optical illusion. But after you find hundreds and hundreds of these so-called optical illusions, it simply doesn't make sense anymore. And so Halton ARP was pointing that out. In his studies of galaxies, they're non-typical galaxies, but which tells you that the quasars are not at the edge of the universe. They're not high redshift objects, meaning they're at great distances. They're high redshift objects because they have high non-uniform electric fields around them. the larger the gradient of the non-uniform field, then the larger the redshift, the larger the bending of light. So that's what's going on. And the data is very clear. The contradictions have been here for decades and decades and decades. Right now, would it be, let me kind of count the decades here. Literally four decades ago today would have been, late February going into early March. I was in the mathematics department at Cornell University doing my work. I had already published papers using the Department of Mathematics in respected peer-reviewed journals, and the politics of science did not allow it. And, the thing was, I tried to be nice to some of these people and talk to them about my work and the fact that it was contradicting standard theoretical astronomy, astrophysics, space science. And these people were so arrogant. They were jerks. I'll just put it that way. There's no question. They were people lost in their own little world. And this had been going on for a very long time. For example, Einstein was very aware of this. He had a hard time dealing with these people. Tesla did. Tesla made comments about the status of theoretical astrophysics and science, because he was, he was a very good physicist. That's what Tesla was. He was not some dude off the street somewhere. He was very well trained, very articulate, and he also had information, as I talk about in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. He had information which was, I believe, came from the archives, because his father was the curator of the church where a lot of the old documents were kept in Kosovo. And so Tesla had access to these when he was growing up. And so his Tesla Tower, the Wardenclyffe Tower, and a lot of his other work, I believe he had some access to documents that gave him an inkling of what was going on. Except he still had to sit down and figure it out for himself. I mean, the guy was, if you look at the list of patents that go along with the name Tesla, then you realize that, yeah, this guy was in a world of his own. He was so advanced over everybody else, what everybody else was doing. And to be able to create, for example, how many systems that you have today did not go through any transitions over time. For example, the grid, the power grid and electrical generator technology, etc., has made some advancements, engineering advancements, etc., over the decades and 100 years or more since Tesla was around. The engineering was, the Tesla did is so sound that it's still there today. It's still being used. It's still absolutely 100% reliable, well-known, well-understood. And Tesla was the guy that came up with all of this. I mean, he was just leagues ahead of everybody else in understanding, and the understanding that AC current was the way to go in terms, because you could change it to, you could transition between low voltage and high current, which would be typical in a house. You don't want real high voltages in house circuits, but then you can easily change it with just a transformer to much higher voltages and low current. And that's how you transmit the energy. You transmit it at high voltage, low current, and then when it gets to the location, you drop it down to a lower voltage and higher current, and that's what powers your house. You wouldn't want 10,000 volt electricity floating around your house. Would not be a good idea. We'd have a lot more injuries, just put it that way, from electricity if you had very high voltages. But Tesla understood this. And Edison had the very first electrical systems. They were DC, but they had to have the generating power plants all over the place. Every block had its own generating power plant. It was not practical. And by the way, that's one of the aspects of my wing generator, is that when I started out, I said, we need a device that's big enough to replace central power companies. The idea of putting tens and hundreds of thousands of three-blade wind turbines or hundreds of millions of little solar panels is a bad idea. It's not engineering. It's not sound engineering. It just isn't. And so the people are realizing that those things do not work. They fail. They're not going to give you reliable electricity. And so what I did is I said, I've got to invent something that can be made large. It can scale up. That's where I actually started talking at the beginning of the show. When NASA was designing that three-blade wind turbine, they didn't understand scaling, how to scale something from something small to big. And the thing that they invented in a little teeny laboratory with a little wind tunnel was not able to scale up. Just didn't work. Doesn't work today, but everybody's running with that. And people are finding out that the stuff doesn't work. So that was one of the key elements of my design work when I developed the wing generator, was it had to be made big and able to take over the load of a central power company. We're talking the better part of a gigawatt of power in a single unit. And so I'm estimating we can get up to probably 400 or 500 megawatts in a single wing generator. And in that case, we can start replacing central power companies with wind, and then you overbuild the system. They're talking about maybe alternative energy getting up to 80% of the load. That's not going to work. You're going to constantly be working with that, the fact that there'll be some days when you're going to have very little energy and you got to go back to the central power company. And that's what GE and Siemens want. They want failed technology. They want the three-blade wind turbines out there that don't work. And with the wing generator, however, you map out the energy distribution, the distributed energy, to about 150% of our needs. So you can throttle back and run it around 75% of the capacity of the wing generator fleet, and run our entire country mainly off the wind with some assistance from only natural gas. So anyway, I'm about out of time here. Good grief. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. As I said, the filters are still on sale, the books, etc. You might still see the notice where there's Christmas sales going on. And but the sales are still, the sale pricing is still there. So go there. I recommend that you become independent for energy, the wing generator and the multi-blade generators, or the various types of LP or diesel generators I sell on my webpage now, water filters, water filter technology, my books, my education program, all very important to become independent of the ask anybody in Texas. That's all I can tell you. Do you need those things? Yes, you do. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.